Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. Now, I would go down my usual, you know, case of providing some elucidations, clarifications on that debt is fraud. But we really have a lot of stuff I need to get through because we're getting towards the end of the year. And I know, you know, we got a couple of months ahead of us, 3+ months, right? But the amount of stuff we need to cover, and I hope you're enjoying the content that we're providing. And I know that you're going to love Monday's show because Monday's show, we're going to give you the historical artifacts that are provided by both, or actually we'll give you the Britannica, because the Britannica gives you kind of the politically correct view of the Republican Party. But actually, Congress, based on its inconsistencies, really helps prove the point. And so we're going to help prove the point that actually Madison created the Republican Party. Now, he kind of did it with Jefferson, with the behest. I think the two of them kind of agreed they needed to create an opposition against Hamilton. The reason this history is being obscured from you is due to the fact that when you realize why they did that, why was that created, nobody's pointing the spotlight on exactly how they recognized what Hamilton was doing, was trying to literally take the Constitution and this new republic sideways. Ah, the impact of that little creature, Alexander Hamilton. So, got a lot of things to cover, though, because it's Feedback Friday. But more importantly, we were going through the We the People 2 invasion in contrast to what yours truly, or I should say, with the help of those patriots around this nation, where we compiled our own First Amendment petition. And so, no credit be mine, the credit be his. So, there's a lot of things, because it is Feedback Friday, that, you know, I get poked, or, hey, you know, you're not talking about this. What's wrong with you? Have you no sympathy? I'll say it. We're going to continue having school shootings. The only solution is getting rid of our entire education system. It is causing our problems. Look upstream. The reason we have such ill-informed automatons who are actually doing the bidding for the establishment, for the deep state. I mean, these people have no idea that they're actually supporting their own death. Because, oh, well, I don't see a knife being plunged into my chest. It's nothing that imminent. And they have no clue that they're killing us with our food, with the crap they're spraying and polluting our water. I mean, folks, when we go down, and we've proven this, and I actually laid it out in 2023 when we sent this email out to the state legislatures. We laid out all the different warfare tactics that they're actually exercising or prosecuting against the states and the people. And they've been doing this for decades. So, let me kind of just move on, because there's a lot of other things that I still need to cover because I didn't cover it. Yeah, the presidential debate's going to happen. Maybe, well, it happened, and maybe they're going to have another one. The real plight here is the media has to maintain this perception, because as long as they can get away with this perception, they're not going to have to pull the rug out from underneath us by locking down another COVID. As long as Kamala Harris stays out and doesn't, because this is just like Joe Biden. This is a revisiting. They succeeded in creating a persona that America is, you know, okay. Don't worry, because the message coming out of the media means that Harris is the, you know, the chosen one, like Biden was the chosen one in 2020. because there was no bad press. As long as she stays out of the press and as long as they can provide her this propped up support with this crap, these crappy debates. And, you know, Trump's got to do better. But and I'm not here pulling for Trump. I'm pulling for America. And I'm pulling for the Constitution. That's why we just don't cover this crap. They're going to have a what I'm trying to lay out here is they've created a beautiful place setting, a beautiful feast for the whole world to see how well America is in control, that this was a smooth transition from Biden to Harris in the next presidency. That's what they want to provide. They know that if they start pulling tactics and things start going sideways, there's probably going to be things that they won't be able to explain. And as long as they're in control of the narrative, and I tell every politician that I advise, you must control the narrative. Remember the old saying, you know, the best defense is a good offense. You got to keep that other team off the field. You got to be driving. You want to make sure that you are literally on the attack. You keep them on their heels. This is one of the reasons why I keep saying, and I keep pointing this out, as a matter of fact, it's even in the news that China is doing more and more exercises to prove that they're planning on invading Taiwan. The best way we could actually put China on its heels is for us to actually communicate to Taiwan, why don't you guys have an open, free election to decide whether you want to just sit there as a sitting duck to become overran by China? Or do you want to actually petition the United States to become a state in the United States? That right there, my friends, that right there would actually completely change everything. And I mean that. It would literally change everything. Because if Taiwan actually had the election to become a state in the United States, then they become a territory. And then now what is China going to do? Invade a state of the United States? This would be deemed as a threat to both the UN and this would be deemed and the globalists as well as a threat to China. But all of the sovereign nations of the world who are kind of in the wrappings, the people of the world would look at this as, hey, Taiwan has spoken. They want freedom. They want liberty. They want to be a part of the United States. And what that would do, what that would do is it would create a mad dash for more states around the world to say, we want to become a state in the United States as well. Now, there are states out there that are absolutely in this pickle because they are in the sights of these evil, conquering, colonialist type of communist states, such as Russia and China, right? I mean, we've been dubbed as the colonizers of the world, and there's truth to that because that was a part of the undermining of our Constitution that was not based on the Constitution. We should never be involved in protecting any state that is going through, you know, a dictatorship or what have you. The only reason we should be involved in going into the aid of another nation is if that nation is seeking not asylum, not seeking some help, because all we're doing is we're basically postponing the inevitable, that they will, you know, fall into somebody other bad design, bad plan or what have you. And what needs to happen is that either they petition to become a state in the United States or, you know, you're on your own, buddy. You're on your own, people. Sorry. But we're not here to actually save you from yourselves unless you really want to take full accountability for yourself. And see, that's the problem. Ah, so if we want to solve the world's problems, the Constitution can do that. Because when people start realizing that we actually have the one document that would actually move us towards global peace and actually a level of tranquility. Now, to be clear, everybody that, you know, has this, oh, you know, they want to hit the brakes and say, no, we can't allow Taiwan and some of these nations just come in. We don't allow them to come in. There is a transition that they have to go through. They'll have to learn English, but until then, they will be considered a territory. They won't be able, it's So the territories of the continental United States was something unique because we had people leaving one state to go into these territories. And we had immigrants as well. But this would be literally a wholesale new block of people. So they can't just become citizens. We don't even have the power to do that. But what we do have the power to do is we do have the power to create an advantage on not necessarily citizenship, but exchange, so they can actually have free travel because they're part of the territory. They can't become a citizen until the standards of naturalization occur. In other words, they have to understand our laws. They have to understand the language. In other words, they actually would have to still go through the full naturalization process. And the state, Taiwan, would, the people of Taiwan would actually have to learn a preponderance of them. I mean, not 50%. No. It would have to be a preponderance. Congress would need to set the standard, but my standard would be 80%. I mean, you got to look at 20% of the geriatrics or those people that are old or incapable of, you know, having the time, resources to go learn. But the newer generations and all other people that are in business and engaged in the society on a professional level and in a living style. It's not that the older people can't, but 9 times out of 10, if you've ever dealt with people in the workplace, even as they get older, they're not in the mood to learning new tricks. That old adage, you know, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. There are older people that are willing to do that, but that's an outlier. So we have to be honest and say, you know, we can't carry everybody across that line or demand 100%. But we have to realistically look, and that's why I say 80%. There may be a bet. I'm not the king here. Fact of the matter is, what we need to do is we need to do what's right. So, you know, as we kind of look through the other things that have happened, we, you know, there's the 9/11. Oh, boy. I mean, I didn't even go off and take 30 seconds to memorialize the 9/11. And what kills me is I had to suffer through the memorializing of that. You know, it's been how many years? 23. And what is it? Because this kind of kills me how people are saying, oh, we're finally getting back to a new normal. That was a big manipulation. I'm not going to go down the conspiracy theorist of all of this, but they take advantage. There's never a crisis they don't take advantage of. Because they have a design in attacking us. They have a design in changing us. And supposedly, some announcers and some programs are, oh, we finally reached this new, we got back to a normal. We've never got back to a normal. There's always been one thing, whether it's been the economy or whether it's been COVID, whether it's been the scares of pandemics. We have been constantly being bombarded with manipulation. And so they say we have a new normal. I tell you, we don't. Because we're never going to overcome what they did to us with COVID until people actually stop being mollycoddle. We start slapping people upside the head and say, get to work. We're not carrying you anymore. The welfare system is the entitlement system. And you've heard me say this. The entitlement system is the greatest evil that we've embraced in America. It is Satan's plan. So, there is no such thing as getting back to normal until we actually pick ourselves up with our bootstraps and start doing this, because it seems like they keep on telling us, you need to be mollycoddled. Oh, you need to be cared for. Folks, you will never get moving on in that type of case. That's why when we kind of look with this romance towards the greatest generation or the early days, back in those days, as a matter of fact, look at the days of the framers. How common was it that child mortality, infant mortality was through the roof? It was a life that they just accepted. As a matter of fact, folks, you probably don't even know this, that the common family in the 1700s, when they had a child, they didn't even bother naming the child. As a matter of fact, in the Adams, John Adams and Abigail Adams, all of their children were called the visitor until they got to age 2, 3, or 4. Then they gave them names. Why? Because they knew that the mortality rate of children was so high that by calling, you know, creating that name and so forth, it was all in God's hands. Whether you liked it or not, they just didn't have the science. They didn't have you know, the technology to understand. So it was a part of life that, you know, we're going to have a lot of kids. And unfortunately, we're going to lose a good percentage of those. But the reason they had lots of kids is because they needed help to survive. And if you want to look at it that way, the businesses of America were the families, because family businesses was everything. This is how America institutionalized slavery in the plantations, because that was a family business. And that's why I tell you the very first franchises in America was the plantations. As these families established themselves and their kids grew up in the 1600s, early 1600s, what did they do? Well, the oldest son would probably get the property that when they died off, and they would keep the oldest son there. And the other children, they would buy land for them and let them establish a plantation westward. That's how plantations and slavery was propagated from the East Coast into the interior. This was happening into Missouri when the Missouri Territory was getting ready to become a state. And I don't want to go through all the history because there's a lot of things I need to get through. But the bottom line is, we don't cover all of these news items, whether it's the debates, whether it's the school shooting. What we cover here are the facts. We're unraveling history for you. We're reading the documentation so that, because you're too busy, somebody has to do it for you, but we can't think for you. And it's absolutely wrong and disingenuous for me to read and tell you what to think. That's what our school system is doing. This is why it is imperative that we read the words to you so that you hear them for yourselves. Challenge us. If we're misreading these words or trying to deliberately mislead you by reading these words wrong or putting, you know, injecting these things that aren't, that's why we put the documents up there. So you read them and you can listen if you want to. But at least we're giving you exactly what Madison said. We're giving you exactly what Jefferson said. We're giving you exactly what the Constitution says. And by next week, Tuesday, Tammy and I are going to dive into reading the Constitution. And oh, by the way, those of you who think I am against all amendments, I'm against the Constitutional Convention, because that is the last thing we need to even be worried about. But there are amendments that I will prove to you that will be necessary to evolve this Republican form of government into the proper text or context for this century. When we start looking at how technology can be applied in the design that we have, we do not need to even have Congress sitting in D.C. As a matter of fact, the District of Columbia could be shrunken down into basically just, this capital where they can have these conferences and meetings when people actually have to be in person for very specific committees or what have you, such as peace or commerce, those types of things. Because I will say that with international commerce and trade, that is their job. But that's their only job, practically, that and war. So they don't need to be in D.C. full time, and we don't need to have one person representing, you know, a million people. We need to have proper representation, and we can have that. We can actually fire a lot, all of those aides that are sitting there in D.C. living in the protected housing market bubble that has never been popped. It's time to pop that bubble, buddies. My friends, we need to actually put the scope and the sights on Washington, D.C. and say, you are an archaic concept under this Constitution. And so we're going to cover, and I'm actually going to be mentioning as we go through this, a couple of the amendments that I truly think we need. And one of those amendments has to do with the ability of the federal government determining what the secrecy should be. That they actually have the patent and copyright and full control, that they do not have to answer to the states over secrecy. That needs to change. That absolutely needs to change. And if you've ever heard me rant on who's that idiot again that went to China and then over to Russia, Snowden. that narcissist Snowden and the damage that he did, we could actually have a much better system that we could actually expose the government without exposing our underbelly and making and actually putting lives at risk and and more importantly, our sovereignty at risk. So there's lots of things that are going to constantly go on, and Feedback Friday is usually when I try to catch up with this. But there's a lot of content that I need to catch up on. So one of the things that I need to do is I need to also dive into the comparison with We the People. But before I do that, because it looks like I won't be able to get into our petition, because I didn't get into our petition. We just really dove through and covered theirs. So I'll do a quick highlight review when we come back from the break. That's about 3.5 minutes away. And then I'm going to dive into what we provide in our petition. Because it's not a contrast and comparison unless we actually cover what we have. Because it is a night and day difference in our First Amendment petition compared to what they are asking people to demand and sign. And I'll let you be the judge. Maybe I have my biases, but I will let you be the judge of where is the real blow being delivered when we're actually taking a strike at our representatives for failing to do their job. We have a Republican form of government. And the fact that they're sending these things to executives and the judiciary just to me is it's a punch in the gut to say they don't even understand our form of government. At We the People too. Everything needs to be going to your representatives. Yeah, you have a right to petition government. But our government is to be Republican in form. And if you keep going into the judiciary, then basically you are supporting the concept of having a judiciary form of government instead of a Republican form of government, one where we are represented and our government is represented. In other words, our representation at the lower level, at a Republican form of government at the state, that lower level government of ours, our representation is our counties. Which is why the counties had representation and suffrage in the Senate, and why we the people have and consistently have representation in the House at the state and in the House at Congress. And in Congress, it is our state that has suffrage in the Senate. So one other thing, and this is a little bit of bragging. I'm really enjoying the rankings because one of the things I've noticed is we're consistently like in the top five of streaming. When you look at who's really ranking up there, we're actually doing really well. And it doesn't have anything to do with me or our sponsors. It has because we don't have any. It's about the content. What this is it's actually starting to prove to people that knowledge is power. The more you know, the better you start seeing how all of these ancillary things, the party issues, the court issues, that doesn't matter. What matters is we focus on where we need to apply our political energy, and that is on our local representatives at the county level. And since nobody's reading these documents, since nobody's offering you the manna from heaven, because, folks, there was a design, and that design was literally from the divine hand of providence in this Constitution. And when you read these documents like we do, everybody has to basically acknowledge, oh my gosh, that these men didn't even know what they were doing. They knew they were doing something great. And they actually all admitted, they all came right out and said that it was the inspiration of the divine hand of providence. As a matter of fact, when we get to the first Thanksgiving proclamation, this is where they actually acknowledge and give basically service and sacrifice to him to sanctify the fact that he blessed us with this nation and constitution. Folks, these are the facts. These are the facts. We do not have a theocracy. We have a place where even Christianity is a free market of ideas and worship. So, when we come back, I will focus on those petitions or the contrast and comparison between those. But there's a lot of other things that we could really cover on a Feedback Friday. But unfortunately, we have to focus on the content because we're just running out of time. And there's way too many distractions in life. Way too many. We'll be right back after this promo. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so I'll try to slow down a little bit, but one of the things I still wanted to say, because we are enjoying the rankings, we are enjoying our growth. Folks, let people know. Get out there and let people know. When are you going to stop getting entertained and when are you going to start getting informed? Reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. The reason we're being divided is because we're not equally informed. When we start realizing really what the facts are, it actually forces us to basically put away our biases and acknowledge the fact that, man, we don't need a convention. We don't need to nullify. We need to actually force the federal government into compliance. We need to use the Constitution as the weapon as it was designed. You hear me say this all the time. Only God knew what we were going to be facing in these days, and he gave us everything we needed. And the Constitutional Convention was not what we need today. That First Amendment right of petition is exactly what we need today. And folks, the reason we're in this mess is because we've been indoctrinated not to use it, and that's why we're in this mess. If you can't connect these simple dots, then you need to stay tuned because we cover all of this and cover all of this and cover all this. And we'll cover it again this coming year in 2025 because we actually have a curriculum that we start off with the Tory Acts and we work our way through all of these different documents. And each time we do it, we try to do it differently. We try to mix it up as we go along. And in so doing, we're exposing you to, I'll just say, the sacred word of our Constitution. It's just like reading the scriptures and understanding the commandments and the laws of God and living within those laws. It's understanding our Constitution and and the power and the freedom and the liberty that we possess, as well as the responsibility as citizens that we possess as well. We are in I tell you all the time, this is a self-government. And right now, we are not acting like a self-government. We are acting like governed people because we have been indoctrinated. So the only way to break this cycle is to actually help people get educated. That's what this show is. And so here's a show that is offering you a level of education you can't even get out of college. Because what college has done is they basically indoctrinated you to make sure that their webbing is all connected so that you can never get your way out. I mean, if you're going to have a system that's controlling people, you want to make sure that you maintain that control. This is why the freedom of academia had to be challenged. In America, it was absolutely challenged. And when they started driving very specific doctrines, in other words, when the left actually got rid of the argument between creation and evolution, and they mandated evolution, the freedom of academia died. It was the beginning of the death of academia. Anybody that really looks at the macro view sees all of this. And this is what I actually treasure in those of you who listen, because you're getting it. Help other people. As a matter of fact, I was talking to I'm humbled with the relationships that I have and with one of the people that I work closely with. We're looking at trying to provide a little signage or, you know, something that you can actually put to say, hey, if you're not listening, you're a part of the problem. If you're not learning what we need to do and how to do it, then you are a part of the problem, and therefore you need to listen to Reclaiming the Republic on Red State Talk Radio. As a matter of fact, because this is the home, this is where we were blessed with the opportunity of getting this message out. Down the road, as we start to get more and more stations, even if we get syndicated. Now, I will say this. If I get syndicated, if this show actually keeps on expanding and growing, I'm going to have to create blanks. Those blanks that we're going to create will not be for anything for supporting me. Now, I may actually have to have a sponsor or two regarding some legal support, because more and more this people start hearing what I have to say, and as I hurt their feelings, what do people like to do when their feelings get hurt? Oh, they want to drag you into court. And unfortunately, I probably have to have some kind of attorney on retainer, but that's not because that's what I want. But that is the evil of our system. But we're not looking to actually make our lot better here. We're actually trying to help everybody understand that the only way our lot can get better is when we unite together in demanding compliance to our Constitution. We have to start preparing ourselves and start actually shifting our priorities to understand that a self-governing system requires our focus and time, especially at the local level, where we really need to be more engaged, because we can't avoid having local government anymore. Do you like your road systems? And I don't even want to open up that can of worms, because that's a rat hole it's a trigger word, you know, roads and regulations and traffic laws. That's a trigger word for conservatives that are trapped in this anarchist movement of sovereignty, state nationals, and so forth. Where do they get off being able to create these laws and rules? That's another discussion for another time, folks. But the fact is that we actually have to talk about the elephants in the room. That's what we do here. And we give you the facts on that. And so as we kind of start getting this feedback, Mr. Jenkins was a new person that just sent me an email and said, hey, do you have anything on the Organic Act? We're going to actually dive into the Organic Act later on after we cover the Constitution. There's a lot of little things we have to cover before the end of the year, but we will dive into the Organic Act. And oh, by the way, we actually have the treaty that was created from that Organic Act between the United States and Britain in 1871, when basically those who infiltrated our government violated the Constitution and unconstitutionally subjugated the United States into a treaty. They thought that that was better than fighting a war, but violating the law is still a violation. And so this is the whole point. If you get anything out of what we say all the time, just because they did it doesn't make it legitimate. If they didn't have the authority, what they did is illegitimate, which is why we have a house of cards, or actually a Babylon metropolis of cards. That is the magnitude and the immensity of this mess. Forgive me for being tongue-tied. Now, let me dive into our petition, because one of the things I want to point out, because it's not like I want to beat anybody up. The fact is, I applaud We the People too in trying to do something. And there's people out there that are discovering, and unfortunately, this is all under the umbrella of this anarchy movement or the sovereignty movement. Oh, well, you know, we've got to start unplugging, or we got to go down these paths. And some of these folks have chosen to use administrative procedures that have been created in this unconstitutional law system that we have. This is not common law. This is not constitutional. What we're dealing with is actually trying to apply to, and that's what we pointed out, that this was going to the executives and the governor of the states. And bottom line, folks, what we have to do is we have to demand compliance of the Constitution. And the one problem that I have, that this invasion, stop the invasion bill, or the stop the invasion administrative document, signed the document and petitioned the government and sent it off to the governor, it doesn't even mention the constitutional citings of Article 1, Section 8 and Article 4, Section 4. Why do they not even cite those documents? Why do they not cite the legal, the constitutional standing and precedence that they are responsible to call the militia to repel the invasion? There's no such thing as an immigration process here. This is not immigration at all. We even covered this in detail throughout our curriculum, because this is a huge problem. They do not have the power to do anything other than repel the invaders. That's what it demands in Article 1, Section 8, and that's what it demands in Article 4, Section 4, that they must repel the invasion and invaders. So I have no idea why they didn't include that. But what I want to do, because I'm not going to read this, because this is 14 pages. Our petition is 14 pages. And as I've looked at this, I go, you know what? We can make this even better, and we're going to. We're going to dive into this, but I've got to get all these other petitions done. And so as I go through these things and I work with people on these petitions, I go, you know what? And I know I'm becoming the speed bump, because more and more people need me to finish things, and we're getting people there that actually can do these things for themselves. And so this is why I tell people, better is the enemy of good enough. And actually that's a Toshism that goes all the way back to my Marine Corps career, who was the guy that always kept on saying that to another Marine I knew. But anyway, what we want to dive into is what we really cover in this invasion. Because the first thing we really point out is this concept that the federal government is tied to very limited objects. One of those objects actually happens to be the Republican form of government. So we basically start off with the fact that James Madison points out, quote, the powers of the federal government are enumerated. It can only operate in certain cases. It has legislative powers on defined and limited objects beyond which it cannot extend its jurisdiction. And right here, we go straight into this clause of Article 4, Section 4. That the United States government shall, this is an object that they're supposed to do, that the United States government shall guarantee to every state in this union a Republican form of government and shall protect each of them from an invasion. Right there. That is the language that everybody needs to understand. There's also plenty of other language out there that we can dive into in Article 1. But the next thing we actually talk about is we talk about the concept of allowing a culture or people to invade, and we even talk about the principles. So the next paragraph, we identify the concept and principle of invasion through mass migration. This was a principle of a jihad. This is a jihad principle of Islam. So we dive actually into this doctrine of Hijra. H-I-J-R-A-H, Hijra. I may be mispronouncing it. But this doctrine is literally designed to actually send more and more people into a nation of a religious faith or a culture or what have you. This is a standard document or doctrine of overtaking and overpowering your enemy. This, I believe, is either in Deuteronomy as well, but bottom line, the point is that when we look at allowing people to come here that aren't immigrating, they're not trying to become citizens, they're trying to actually attack us by demanding access to our political systems and so forth. This is a doctrine that basically is used to overthrow a nation. So we kind of lay out also the fundamentals of what is the definition of an invasion or an invader. The fundamental definition of invasion is this, an act or instance. We actually, this is in the petition, an act or instance of invading or entering an enemy, especially by an army. So it could be a combatant army. It could be a cultural or religious army. It doesn't have to be an armed force. It just is an invasion of one type of people that have one mindset and one objective. The second definition, the entrance or advent of anything troublesome or harm or disease, how your body can be invaded. Entrance as if to take possession or overrun. And then the fourth definition, infringement by intrusion. So as we lay this out, how can you define what's going on our southern border anything other than invasion? They keep on labeling it as immigration. Not one of those persons went to a port of entry and actually filed the paperwork that is the legal process of migrating. And not one person has actually come across that. They're all evaporating. They're all going into and hiding in the woodwork. Not only are they allowing these people to come across the South, it's like we talked about earlier with Springfield, Ohio, where they're being overrun by the Haitians. And now we actually talked about this weeks and weeks and weeks ago. And now it's actually hitting the news that people are losing their pets in Springfield because they're eating them. Because this culture had been basically imported, the importation of people by the federal government, which is not within their power. Do you understand what I just said? They cannot bring refugees into the United States. That has never been delegated to them. And the reason I'm saying that is because I realize that we didn't even dive into that one little issue. Right here. We kind of talked about it in the petition number two over the treaties, because technically it was the treaty, the unconstitutional treaty subjugating us to the UN, that actually got us in this line and series of treaties that in the 1960s, America signed off with a UN treaty that we would participate in taking the displaced people of the world. And that is how it all, that's how they breached the Constitution. But again, not one thing was legitimate in any part of this process. There's no legitimacy to us entering into the UN. There was no legitimacy in the creation and our trying to enter into the League of Nations. We don't have, or the government, federal government does not have the authority within that constitution to adjoin to a global polity or any foreign or international polity. It's one thing to say, you know, we will have jurisdiction over all crimes committed against the laws of nations, because we acknowledge that there are international laws out there. But when it comes to the citizens of the United States that may be charged against those international laws, the United States Supreme Court will have jurisdiction over that. The federal government will have jurisdiction over its citizens that violate those international laws. It does not empower them to actually adjoin to and allow those laws to come in here. Do you understand, folks, what is really on the line here? That everything that they've been doing, and this is where we embrace unconstitutional government in so many different ways that it just makes my head spin. Where is the outcry for the people of America saying, get rid of the Department of Transportation? We've just accepted it. Oh, look at how great the federal government has been in giving us this highway system. And folks, look at what they're doing. They've spent trillions and trillions of dollars from Obama, even well before that. They've been spending trillions of dollars into our infrastructure. Even Biden had the Build Back Better. Look at the amount of money that they've spent and how crappy our infrastructure is. They use that as a process of laundering money to take from you by taxing and giving it out to the unions and these contractors and making sure that the people that are the heads of these corporations are all on the take. And what they do is they take that money and they just like with the energy policies that Obama put in. This is a great example, because when he actually, outside of the infrastructure, the energy thing was something that was a part of his money and a part of his payback to those people who were contributors. This is how they pay back their faithful contributors. So they pass a bill that we're going to actually now start getting a bunch of, you know, solar panels and wind farms out there. And they took billions and billions. I think it was in the trillions as well, just on that. So Obama unconstitutionally took and spent money, getting Congress's help to do this, and spend money to actually pay off those people like Kaiser and other people that contributed to his campaign to get him elected. And now they have a windfall benefit. And in turn, in the next election, this is how Clinton did it. This is how all these corrupt, these corrupt globalist politicians constantly get reelected, because they make sure that the money goes back into the pockets so that that money will be available in the next election. It's not about actually building anything. This is why we're in this situation, because there's no accountability. They realized, as Britain realized, that the other way to infiltrate by taking over is to literally gain control by money controlling our political system. This makes me ponder, and I forgive me for going down this rat hole, but when you really look at one of the most important books that really expose this new age of conspiracy, and you'll actually find it on our Constitutional Articles page, I think you'll even find it on my podcast page, A Conspiracy to Undermine the Governments and Religions of Europe. That was written back in the 1790s. It exposed this globalist conspiracy of communism, this global communist movement. And everybody basically says, that's passé, that's not happening. Well, how is it that almost everywhere we look and everything we see being done with all of the governments in working together for this globalist movement, from chemtrails, our food system, chains of distribution? I mean, everything is boiling down and down. In America, pretty soon we're only going to have one or two grocery stores that will be providing us with all of the food. One of them will be Walmart, and the other one will be the old brick-and-mortar Albertsons, Safeway, Kroger's, whatever, whoever becomes the last. But as they take away the competition, it reduces the amount of food available to the people in the area. And so, because if you look at it, in the old model, there was enough food at all of the Safeways, Albertsons, you know, Kroger's, Fred Meyer's, Lion. I mean, when you had a grocery store almost on every other corner, then that means that there was a lot of food sitting on the shelf. So if a disaster happened, people could at least go and clear the shelves. They could take the last money that they had and buy stuff that they needed. Now that you've trimmed that down, and now that they're capable of doing just-in-time stocking, in other words, they have trucks moving all the time to think that food is going to be there. And when normal cases, it is there. They can actually sustain normal demand. But they cannot and will not be able to do what you could do with a multitude of stores. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because the availability and the competition, so it actually helps them raise their profit margins up, reduce the amount of food and necessities, because what we see in our grocery stores are what we consider necessities. These are staples, you know, cleaning and that type of stuff. So when we look at what they're doing, this is all a part of the globalist movement. And what's happening on our southern border is all a part of that globalist movement, which is why we bring that up. So let me get back to that. So this is why we actually see how there was this invasion. We even point out that there was an intent by the Dutch government to actually infiltrate the colonies in America when they sent a small colonizing group into New York. And so as that was discovered, basically the colonies that were here, in lieu of England, instead of having England, because the lines of communication were so stretched and so slow they actually just had to respond for the crown, for Parliament, way back then in that point in time when they did that. I want to say that was in the 1600s. But anyway, nevertheless, they understood that an invasion could be not necessarily an armed force. The Dutch came in as colonists to actually create a little wedge, a toehold in the middle of America right there in New York. And so when we go into the next part of Congress, because we actually look at the need of the militia and the intent. So the next part of this petition, we actually identify that they must actually have this militia as a part of our national forces. The militia is a state and county force. The federal government literally got into this whole problem of federalizing the militia. So what we point out is what James Madison basically said regarding having a uniform discipline for the militia in dealing with an invasion, specifically focused on the invasion. This is what he says, and this is in the petition. Congress ought to have the power to establish a uniform discipline throughout the states and to provide for the execution of the laws suppressing insurrections and repel invasions. These are the only cases wherein they can interfere with the militia. And the obvious necessity of their having power over them in these cases must convince any reflecting mind. Without uniformity or discipline, military bodies would be incapable of action. Without a general controlling power to call forth the strength of the Union to repel invasions, the country might be overrun and conquered by foreign enemies. He's not talking about combatants. He's talking about people that are coming here with an intent to overrun us. Mohammedans, or the globalists, by bringing in all different forms of people. Anyway, so no reference at all in that regarding the military invasion, a military invasion, just an enemy invasion. We go through a lot of other points on the enemies, the invasions, and this concept of how the militia has this responsibility. Now, the Dick Act, just to say this, because we don't highlight this in here, the Dick Act of 1903 is where the federal government violated the Constitution and they took full control over the militia even when it's not in operation. They're to be hands off. What should actually be happening, and we covered this in one of my articles, What is the Real Problem? I actually covered this to prove that what should be happening is the states should actually be maintaining a militia throughout every county. Because especially those states that are along the borders, Washington State, Idaho, Montana, all those states that go across the northern border, each county that is on that border should have a militia force, because in case the Chinese come from Canada into America, we need to have a militia force ready and capable of doing what may need to be done. And even if it doesn't happen in 60 years, the funding and support and the implementation, or I should say the appropriation of making sure that there is a properly implemented militia throughout these states must be done. These things are imperative because they're demanded by the Constitution. These are objects actually given to the federal government, what they have to do. That's what these petitions actually point out. That's the huge difference. I'm sorry, I didn't keep reading this. Go read Petition 3, and you come back to and tell me whether we hit the mark or not. It's all about the truth. I'm G.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.